wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I have a...
Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and pro football focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey now.
So I know it's Friday. We're a little bit late getting this podcast out. We're running a little bit behind this week, but we had to get it done. We got the AFC and NFC championship games this weekend. There's been a lot of coaching changes around the National Football League, so of course... Who better than Rumford Johnny?
Our resident fantasy expert.
Our resident fantasy and our multiple-time Pro Bowl, All-Pro, MVP, Hall of Fame guest, Rumford Johnny of Sportable NFL. He's going to be joining us today.
Did we miss any superlatives there?
I think we got them all. Prince of Profiteroles.
That's good.
So we got Rumford Johnny joining us today. He's going to be on for the entire show. He's going to help us talk about the upcoming NFC and AFC championship games between, of course, the Seattle Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers in the early game on Sunday, and then the later game on Sunday, the AFC championship with the Patriots, the New England Patriots, hosting the Indianapolis Colts. And we'll also break down all of the coaching changes around the NFL, which there have been significant developments, ranging from John Fox finally taking the Chicago Bears job to John Fox not being with the Denver Broncos anymore, and what on earth the San Francisco 49ers are thinking with Jim Tom Sula as their new head coach after the Jim Harbaugh experience.
Right.
So all of that and more will be coming up after the break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast with, of course, our dear friend Rumford Johnny. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.
Stick around.
Our guest this week of the F-Ball NFL Podcast is no stranger around these parts. It's Rumford Johnny of Sportable NFL. He's joining us to talk about the playoffs that continue this weekend, as well as talk a little bit about the coaching moves around the league and whatever else we come up with.
Just talking foosball here.
Yes. Welcome, Johnny.
Welcome back.
Thanks, guys. It's always a pleasure to join you. Always have fun. You know, we were just talking before we started taping about all the different things that are going on. So just to refresh people a little bit, too, you might have known me from Two Mugs Fantasy Football. We, you know, decided to fold up shop, and basically I'm with Sportable NFL now, right, and doing some stuff with them and hopefully some draft stuff as well. So having fun and kind of branching off in different directions. So I'll still be around, still be talking about, you know, football and fantasy and rookie fantasy, for Dynasty coming up very, very soon. So I'm really excited about that as well.
You're going to have to let us know if you're coming out for the draft at all this year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, we'll be in Chicago.
Oh, coming down. Oh, well, yeah. I have to kind of arrange. We'll see if that will work out for me. Maybe.
I'll bring the profiteroles.
Profiteroles, yes. And I mean, there's so many people. You guys already know this too. There's so many people within the Chicago, the pentaveret, if you will, of football people. I know Evans. I believe Evan Silva's in Chicago, and our buddy Dexter's Library, Ken Griggs. So it's a bunch of cool people. I'd love to kind of meet up with you guys. So hopefully that'll happen. We'll cross our fingers.
Yeah, keep us posted.
Absolutely.
So the continuation of the playoffs. Finally, mm-hmm. We are at championship weekend. We've got the New England Patriots hosting the Indianapolis Colts and the Seattle Seahawks hosting the Green Bay Packers. Let's start with the Packers and the Seahawks, since that is, for whatever reason, the early game on Sunday, even though it is being played on the West Coast. I can't personally. I'm not feeling the Packers here. We've got Aaron Rodgers with that calf injury that continues to bother him, that continues to linger. Eddie Lacy showed up on the injury report today with a knee, so that doesn't help out the offense. Depending on what this knee injury is and how it's faring come Sunday. And then you have the Seattle Seahawks, where everything just seems to be firing on all cylinders on both sides of the ball. Not a lot of key injuries. And you know, they got that home field advantage that can't be ignored because it just gets so ridiculously loud in there. So personally, I feel like it's going to be a pretty uphill battle for the Packers on Sunday.
It feels that way. But, I mean, the thing about playoff football, I mean, you really – what most people thought that the Broncos would pretty much – you know, would roll pretty much too and get to this next level too. So nobody expected that to kind of flatten out like it did. So I just think playoff football is
just so you know.
Yeah. Right.
I did on the show last week. Yeah. It wasn't the most confident upset call, but I called it.
That's awesome. And good. Listen, good for you, because look, I think that, anything really can happen in the playoffs. I mean, year to year, it's so crazy. I mean, I play daily fantasy a lot now this year, and I've enjoyed it quite a bit over on DraftKings and stuff. And, you know, now it's down to, like, just those two-game slate. And it gets really, really difficult to kind of pinpoint who you're going to play, you know, for on each side. And you know, it's such a small pool of talent to pick from. It's really hard to figure, because – as much as we all say, yeah, you know, we feel like Seattle and is going to roll in this one, but their over under is much lower than, you know, Patriots Colts. So it's like you're going back and forth thinking, is this going to be a low scoring defensive battle, or do the Seahawks just, again, because they're a better overall team, do they roll over their defense of the Packers too, and do they just kind of dominate them on that front? Or are we all wrong about this, and do they come out like pounding the rock with Eddie Lacy, who maybe that knee injury is not much to really write home about anyway, and maybe Rodgers' calf isn't bothering him that much. Maybe they're shooting it all up with drugs, and, you know, he's nice and flexible and ready to go.
Whatever he did last week at halftime.
I know, exactly. he rubbed some oils on it. It was nice.
He looked completely different in the second half.
He totally did. He had a very small karate instructor who was in the Mr. Miyagi, who rubbed his leg. No, it was miraculous what he did. I think a lot of that too. Again, as we say, guys, it's about playoff football. I mean, you fight through the pain a little bit. Maybe he got a little injection there to kind of numb things up and loosen things up a little bit. But also, you know, when you're playing at that level with that kind of adrenaline, because, you know what's at stake, it kind of all washes out. And that's why we can't just say, wow, yeah, this is just going to be this dominant game from Seattle. We don't know. I mean, it could be a game where the Packers come out, you know, just moving the football down the field, score early, and then all of a sudden their defense, you know, it pins back the ears and makes things difficult for Russell Wilson. And, you know, last we saw, you know, Marshawn Lynch, he didn't look that great, I think, in that last matchup. He looked okay. Maybe they're, you know, ready to kind of bottle up that run a little bit and stop them and make them a little bit more one-dimensional. I don't know. I mean, I think this is interesting. I think it could very well be a dominant Seattle performance, but we don't know for sure. I mean, I really think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I hope that. In a way, not to take nothing away from our friends who are big Seattle Seahawks fans, because I know they're excited about the possibility of a repeat, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's all about you know being a fan. You're really kind of letting your team, you know, dominate and win a couple back to back. That's great. But sure. I think there's a strong possibility that we're really underestimating the Packers, who I thought honestly like. That this was going to be New England in Green Bay anyway at the end of the year. I really felt strongly about both teams. I thought they both did a really good job drafting in both in free agency as well. I thought they were both kind of sized up nicely. So, but again, it just, how do you, like you said, they're all healthy in Seattle.
Right. Right.
Seemingly, you know, a few injuries across the defensive line, but overall, that secondary is pretty, you know, much intact, and the linebackers are nasty, and the safeties are like, they just kill everybody. I mean, literally, on the field, and really, they don't need, you know, Russell Wilson finds the open man. I mean, it's not about, you know, being the big sexy receiver. It's like he can find Baldwin, you know, right. Curse. Wilson, I mean, he can find whoever's open, and they're going to lead behind, you know, Marshawn Lynch. He's going to grind it out. And this is a much better matchup for Lynch too, by the way. And I think at a playoff level, Marshawn Lynch, it's just that light goes on. You know what I mean? That, like, he's right. just going to, he's going to be nasty at home. The crowd's going to get him all pumped up, and he's just going to kind of roll over people. So, you know, there's a possibility that that happens, but again, it's just the way the ball bounces. I mean, you make a mistake. You know, I know Russell Wilson protects the football really well, but you make one gaffe, one fumble, you know, one mistake, you know, and your fortunes change very, very quickly. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's really competitive and it's a high-scoring game, but, you know, the way Vegas sees it right now, it's the lesser of the two. So, you know, it could be very well where they both kind of punch each other in the mouth a little bit. It's a little more of a low scoring game. So we'll see.
Yeah. I look at the Packers, and obviously you've got Aaron Rodgers. He's got a lot of receiving weapons, but then you have the Seattle Seahawks secondary, which is, you know, built to stop these multi-receiver passing mm-hmm. offenses simply because everybody's just so good. And it's going to be quite a different experience than what the Packers had last week against Dallas's secondary. So that's what I think is going to be the real deciding factor is who gets the larger percentage of big plays. And I feel like while Rodgers is going to get some because he's Aaron Rodgers and mm-hmm. that's just the way it goes. I just don't see Green Bay getting enough big plays that set them up in scoring position, things like that, in the same way that Seattle can, especially when Seattle can, you know, they can move the ball pretty well, especially at home, especially in these big situations. And so that, to me, I think that's the thing is the big plays and who gets more of them. And I see the Packers generally struggling with that just because you look at the secondary and it's hard to look at any of them and say, oh, well, we can just target this guy all night, or we can target that guy all night, and we'll get chunks and chunks, because it's just not how it works there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, it really comes down to the secondary. I mean, I do think in any team, I think when you have a better overall secondary, it helps your, you know, you create coverage sacks, basically, mm-hmm. for your you know, defensive line. Even though they have a good defensive line, their defensive line is very good. It's not great by any stretch. I mean, it's very good. But the fact that their secondary can hold receivers in check creates coverage sacks where they can have additional time to get to the quarterback. And when you have someone like we've been talking about with Rodgers, with the inability to kind of move laterally and scramble now because of his calf injury, it does create some problems. I think, you know, if he can get the ball out of his hands quickly, I think of all the receivers, I think Randall Cobb has the best matchup in the slot. I think, they'll line him up in the backfield too, I think, in this game, out of necessity, just to kind of really, you know, confuse the defense a little bit. I think he'll probably be one of the more busy targets for him. I think the tight ends will be busy as well. I think they'll be out on the field, Corliss and Rodgers, because they'll need them out there anyway to block. So they'll both be out there as short-range targets as well. And I think if they're going to win this game, or if they're going to be competitive in this game, even on that level, the Packers, they really need to run the football early. They need to get him going, need to get Elise going, even if they mix in Starks a little bit too. Exactly. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, they have to. And I think you can. I think it's a misconception to say that you can't run on Seattle. It's harder to pass on Seattle, but you can still run on Seattle. And I think that if they do that and they move the ball down the field and they quiet the crowd and take them out a little bit, you know, if they, as they're kind of eating up the clock. I think malaise gets to crowds more than anything else. And by that I mean when you destroy the clock and you do go on these 7-minute drives, that leg takes the crowd out of it a little bit. And that's good. That's good for them to kind of dictate the pace a little bit. So it'll be on them to really do that. And I think they have the ponies up front. They have, you know, they have the blockers up front to really kind of make things happen in the run game. So it'll be interesting to see if they do that. Cause I know that Mike McCarthy historically likes to run in December and January. So we'll see if they, you know, establish that and are consistent with it, then I think we'll have a more competitive game, probably a lower scoring game, but a more competitive game where both teams are really kind of wanting to run the football. And obviously we know that Seattle will anyway, but I think that's really key. I think if they come out slinging, there's a good chance that, you know, Rodgers will throw picks and, you know, game over early. You know what I mean? Where it's just like Seattle gets a big lead and they can tee off on a guy with a bad wheel at quarterback. I think, you know, that's definitely what they don't want to do. They want to be able to kind of eat the clock up a little bit, run the football, keep him protected a little bit, and dink and dunk short range stuff. Yards after the catch, because all those guys can, you know, especially somebody like Cobb who can break off big runs after the catch. That's what you want to do. And then when they do that, then you can kind of sneak a few over when nobody's paying attention to Jordy Nelson, you know, on the outside and get some bigger plays going. I think that's something that happens when everything else is kind of clicking and you're moving the football. So.
Moving on to the later game, the AFC Championship game, the Indianapolis Colts at the New England Patriots. This is a game where I expect there to be a good deal of running, because that appears to be what the Patriots do against these Colts the past couple times they've met. 44 rushing attempts, 46 rushing attempts, just kind of throwing the football, jamming the football down that defense's throat and kind of daring them to stop them, and they really can't. Do you expect that's going to be the approach again, or are the Colts fully ready for that and the Patriots are going to just kind of take it and do it to a different direction?
I think the latter. I think they're going to take it to a different direction. I think what happened last time, guys, is that they started out wanting to throw. Brady was a little off in that game. I got picked off a couple of times, I believe, as well as Luck did as well on the other side. But he wasn't on the mark that game. And I think out of necessity, they readjusted and it really started to feed Jonas Gray. What happened after the fact is that, you know, the infamous Jonas Gray, you know, his iPhone or whatever died on his alarm clock or whatever, and didn't show up for practice, and then became sort of, you know, bench fodder after a huge game. Classic Belichick move. And then they sign, you know, LeGarrette Blount, who then comes in and does damage, and everybody kind of forgets about Jonas Gray. I think that they'll both be involved this game. I would love to see that they're going to have, you know, Gray active this game. It would be nice to see that, because I think they should run the football a little bit in power, but because that's what they do really well. But it's interesting to me, without Brian Stork, who I think may be the rookie center, who may be out this game, possibly, hasn't been practicing. If they go Wendell, then they become less of a power team,
right?
At center, and I think they become more of a finesse team, more of a pass team. So I think it's probably still more Blount on early downs, and then they mix in Shane Vereen a little bit, and they become more finesse, pass. And, of course, having a fully healthy, which is rare in January, to have a fully healthy Rob Gronkowski on the field, I think they legitimately just want to just take the roof off with Gronk and just feed him all day. So, and of course you've got Edelman. Yeah, exactly. You've got Edelman, you know, who's going to catch his passes to LaFell. I think draws probably Vontae Davis as the X receiver. So that's a bad matchup. So I think they kind of stay away from him. So he's more of a decoy in this game. Brady kind of learned his lesson not to really test Vontae Davis, who I think is legit one of the top, you know,
he's one of the most underrated corners.
Yeah, he's one of the top probably, you know, five or six, you know, cornerbacks right now playing. And so they'll stay away from him, and I think they'll go more to Gronk. And, you know, basically they go more, you know, 12 personnel. and probably don't see much of Amendola in this game unless, you know, in the return game, obviously, because he's been featured quite a bit lately. So, so I think it's really about them protecting Brady, being able to run their hurry up offense, which I think they'll, you know, again, they'll want to make sure that they have, you know, the tight ends on the field and stuff. So, I think that's kind of what they want to do. And I think at home, they'll be able to operate that way. I think that on the other side of the football, I think with Andrew Luck and that offense, I think they can basically do what they want as well. I don't think they're going to take the top off the defense. So I think that's very, very important to Belichick and company. Revis will probably be on T.Y. Hilton. I think if anybody gets over in this game, it's probably Dante Moncrief, who has one of the better matchups in the defense.
Yeah.
He'll be able to kind of get open a little bit. I'm not worried about guys like veteran guys like Reggie Wayne. I think he's kind of done right now, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and the tight ends, you know, Fleener and Allen, I think they'll have some success. I think they'll probably, because of the fact that Fleener really kind of had a huge game last meeting in week 11, they'll try to limit him a little bit and do it a little bit different matchup. So maybe Dwayne Allen, or even their third tight end, Jack Doyle, maybe gets over and steals a tight end, a red zone touchdown, excuse me. So something like that could happen. And Boom Heron, of course, I think will be very, very busy as a check down option, because he has been lately. I think they don't run the football well right now, but they are doing that. The running back is your extension of the running game. Well, instead of running for 5 yards a clip, you're giving him a 5 yard check down pass.
Right.
So it's the same thing. You know what I mean? It's like,
what's what they were doing with Ahmad Bradshaw.
Right. And I think Bradshaw was probably a little bit more effective. He's a veteran, and when he was healthy, he probably could do a little bit more, because he was a little bit more powerful and a little bit more elusive too.
Oh yeah.
And you know, Heron's a good player, but he's not as talented as Bradshaw, but I think he's good for what they do. I mean, and I think he'll continue to be busy, so he'll catch a lot of passes. So, but it'll be a fun game. I mean, I think, you know, that ultimately, you know, the Patriots will probably be too much for the Colts in this game. Eventually, I mean, they're a great second half team all year. The Pats have been just kind of a dominant second half team. They might come out a little flat to start the game, but I think in the second half they just kind of roll. That's what they've been doing, and they'll go to another Super Bowl, in my opinion, and hopefully they win this one. But you know, I think that, you know, I think Andrew Luck
they're not going to be facing the Giants, so
yeah, thanks, pal. unlike the you know, like Peyton Manning, I think who had difficulty for years trying to beat the Patriots, and Tom Brady eventually did. I think the same will be true of Andrew Luck eventually. I just think this year, you know, they're close but not quite. They're getting there, and I think they're legitimately a team that's just going to continue to keep doing that every year and be competitive, and they'll get there. You know, what might be next year, might be the year after, but I think this year it's they're just this close to not getting there.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed with the Colts' victory over the Broncos, even though, you know, Peyton Manning had a bad day and kind of, you know, had his hand in that. But I don't look at this matchup on Sunday and say, yeah, Tom Brady's going to have a day similar to what Peyton Manning had. You know, it's not the same situation. So, I mean, I think the Colts have the ability to keep this game kind of close, at least like you were saying at the beginning, because the Patriots can start a little bit flat this year. Just because you've got this guy Andrew Luck, you know, and his competitiveness and the way that he's going to lead this team, you know, they're not going to be nice and calm and chilled out and whatever, it's the Patriots and this is hard. You know, they're not going to go in there with that kind of attitude. But it's going to be really difficult, because basically you with Revis on T.Y. Hilton, that's it. There's no T.Y. Hilton. So, you know, where you go from there. On top of the fact that, you know, Andrew Luck has dealt with so many drop passes this year, his receivers have dropped more of his passes than any other quarterback. You know, that problem comes back again. They're going to leave some plays on the field, and that's just not something you can do, you know, as this young quarterback, as this relatively young team. going into Foxborough for the AFC Championship game, you just can't leave those plays on the field, and I think that that's just going to happen just because that's what's been happening with the Colts all year.
Yeah, and I think they, you know, the game plan wise, it'll be a little bit more varied than the last matchup, I think.
Sure.
You know, they found something that worked with the power run, and they just ran all over them. I think that, you know, it worked, but I think that they've, if you look at the numbers for the Colts, the last, you know, since that game, you know, they, I think they allowed two running backs to come close to 100 yards, but nobody over 100 yards.
Right.
So I think that, you know, I think the Patriots can run for over 100 yards on the Colts, but I don't think that their game plan will be necessarily to just come out and run. They'll mix it up a little bit. I think they're probably, if they get a decent lead, then they'll run the football and kind of, you know, switch the gear to sort of go power run at that point. But ultimately, they'll want to have a nice cushion of scoring there to, before they start to sort of kind of eat up the clock, I think. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I wouldn't be overly shocked to see the Colts, you know, do something here. But no, I think you're right. I think at the matchup, the Patriots match up well against the Colts. Not that the Broncos didn't. And actually, that was the main reason I picked against the Broncos last week. It was more about the Broncos than the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the Colts were good enough, but I thought there was just chinks in the armor, if you will, with the Broncos. Where the Patriots, I don't see that. They're kind of humming right now. So
that's
gonna be really tough with the Colts.
It kind of flies back to that. I think that the last like three or four weeks, really, for the Broncos. I mean, you know, we kind of knew that they were kind of hiding, they were masking an injury for Peyton Manning.
Sure,
it really seemed like it. Yeah. Sure.
And of course we found out after the fact, but the fact that they ran the football so much, I mean, they rarely attempted a pass. It was almost like they outsmarted themselves in this matchup too, because I think if they had really tried to be a little bit more dominant with the run game in this matchup, they might have pulled out a win.
Right.
To me, it was like a lot of rainbow passes from Manning, and clearly,
they
you
gave
know,
up on C.J. Anderson.
Yeah,
and he's
couldn't.
A big reason of what they did in the final,
or even Hillman.
Month.
Even Hillman, he became a ghost and the last game, you know, prior to that, you know, before that matchup, Hillman actually was splitting carries at that point because Anderson was a little dinged up. So, I mean, they could have gone 50-50 again and probably dominated, but, you know, they opted to, like, okay, we'll put this on Peyton's shoulders again. And I thought, you know, that was a mistake. I think, you know, whatever's going on with him.
It seems so ridiculous to say.
It does, but when you see that clearly at a certain point in the season, people can tell you, they watch his passes, like he's not stepping into his throws, he's not setting his feet, and when you're just using your arm, he doesn't have a big strong arm. He has an accurate arm. He needs to be able to set his feet to get air under the football and get the football downfield. Now when you can't do that and you don't have that elite arm strength, because he never really did, then you see these floating passes, which usually, if you're playing a top defense, you know, it's going to result in a turnover or close to it in almost every matchup. So I think that's kind of where it, you know, things kind of went awry. And we saw that. And, you know, it was a matter of him masking a player that is physically been beaten down. You know, he's had neck surgeries. I mean, he's not a kid. I mean, it's all kind of where he's kind of wearing down a little bit. I mean, off season will be great. If he comes back next year, that'd be great. I think people will be kind of poo pooing him if you're into fantasy in a dynasty league, you know, or not dynasty league, but in redraft, you probably get him for a song next year because people are like, oh, Peyton's done. And they'll, you know, he'll go to Sweden and, like, you know, be submerged in some kind of like some goo that'll like rejuvenate all of his back problems. And he'll come back and throw like 30 touchdowns in like the first half of the season. That wouldn't shock me in the least. I mean, because, you know, he's not healthy right now. Get healthy, get better, do whatever you need to do to get better, and then come back. And maybe he might be that guy that just is good for half a season. And maybe they're a team, guys, that next year really should consider drafting another running back. Because, you know, while they have good running backs, the guys get injured all the time on that, right. that running back stable, they're going to need those guys in, you know, December and January for Peyton if he starts to wear down, if he's back next year. So I'd love to, like, see them draft some a big banger running back as well. I think Monty Ball was a mistake. I don't think he's that good, to be honest with you. And I think we found that out this year, that there are other running backs who are better fits for that offense. So it'll be interesting to see if they draft another running back, and then have to be early, maybe a little bit later or whatever, but somebody else to add to the stable. I think that would be a smart thing for them to do, and to kind of make things a little bit better for Peyton. Maybe, you know, Wes Welker, I think, is done.
Yeah.
So maybe they draft somebody to replace him, or maybe they make a trade to get somebody that's close to that, or there's a free agent out there that they think can kind of pick up that role and help Peyton a little bit. Because, again, a quarterback who loses arm strength is going to rely on checkdowns and on a running back. So that's a good thing for him to kind of, you know, to be able to rely on too. So, and they'll probably part ways with Welker anyway. So you
think he's coming back?
Peyton? I think that general manager, president, John Elway says that, you know, Peyton will be involved in the coaching search, whatever change, and they're already strongly considering Gase as the coach. I mean, that kind of, the dots are all kind of connecting there.
Yeah, I think if they just promote Gase and.
Yeah, I mean, if he
he's cool
becomes
enough with that, then I could see it, but I don't see it past one more year.
No, I don't either. I think he doesn't want to. I think if he plays one more year and they get to the Super Bowl or get to like the championship and they lose, he probably will walk away.
Yeah,
I think this was a down like year for him, like because of, you know, it seems like a come down from last year from the Super Bowl. That, you know, he didn't want to walk away this way. I think if anything, he probably would have walked away last year if he thought that, you know, physically he couldn't do it anymore. Right. I feel like he thought he could. And if he feels like in the offseason he still can again, then, you know, he'll keep plugging. So I don't know. I think, honestly, like between the two, between Brady and Peyton, I think Brady's probably physically in better shape than Peyton is right now.
Oh yeah, he didn't have three neck surgeries in a year.
No, I know, and that's kind of my thing. Like while they're very close in age, they're miles apart, like health wise. I mean,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
and I'm sure, and I think Peyton's probably, when healthy, is a better passer than Brady anyway. But you know, once the season starts to carry on a little bit, I don't see that. I don't see Brady wearing out. I see he can't throw a deep ball worth a shit. Excuse me. But that's Brady. I mean, he never could anyway. But I think that, it doesn't matter really. Cause I think when it comes to like those hurry up offense, making clutch plays, I think that's what Brady's wheelhouse is. Peyton in the playoffs hasn't been that guy. You know, right. He's been the guy that kind of folds up his, the table and the chairs and, you know, leaves the picnic come playoff time. But, it'll be interesting. I mean, once if he continues to play at a high level and goes right into the end of the season looking that way, then there's a good chance. I don't know that that's going to be true, though. If everything that we've seen the last couple of years says anything to us, is that he is, you know, somebody that gives you a good, you know, half to like three quarters of a season and then starts to fizzle out. So. We'll see.
Next up, I want to talk about the coaching changes around the league. Last week's episode here of the F-Ball NFL podcast, we talked about all of the vacancies that were created, not just on Black Monday, but since, including the Doug Marrone opt-out and the Dick LeBeau resigning and whatever is going on with the offensive situation for the Cleveland Browns. But pretty much we got most of these vacancies filled. Rex Ryan is now head coach of the Buffalo Bills. Jack Del Rio is the head coach of the Oakland Raiders. Looks like John Fox, who was also let go by a mutual thing. Don't forget it's mutual.
Parting of ways.
John Fox, the Denver Broncos. It looks like he's going to be the next head coach of the Chicago Bears.
That's not quite as official, though, but, like,
there's some sources roaming Twitter right now.
Yeah. Supposedly Pace is out there today or something. I don't know.
And then Todd Bowles is now the head coach of the Jets, which leaves just Atlanta, as long as John Fox is indeed the coach of the Chicago Bears. That leaves Atlanta Falcons and Denver Broncos as the only remaining head coaching vacancies. Adam Gase might get that promotion in Denver. Atlanta's likely waiting on Dan Quinn. Out of all of these, and then of course there's Jim Tomsula, hired by the 49ers, with a press conference that I need to watch, apparently.
Oh my God. I don't know. I mean, for me, I like the Quinn, if it happens, I like the Quinn hire in Atlanta. Because I don't think they're really a team that has a lot of issues on offense.
Right.
Their offense is fine. I think their offense can only get better. I think they just really need to that's a team that sort of inversely is wrong in the trenches.
Yeah.
You know, they're peripherally they're great. The core is garbage. Okay.
Yeah.
We're up front on the offensive line, defensive line is trash.
Yes.
And that's where they need to fix it. Now Quinn gets in there, gives them some attitude on defense. You can band-aid some of those problems on defense and they can be competitive again. I don't think offensively it matters a ton. I think you've got a smart quarterback. I think you've got some really talented wide receivers. I think they do need to add some more talent to the offense a little bit too as well, and they will.
Yeah. They know what Steven Jackson is, and he's old. Is what he is.
Yeah, exactly. and they can add a playmaking tight end. They could add, another wide receiver. I mean,
they could
do a lot of stuff. And get exponentially better too on that front. So, but really, defensively, they're a sieve. They know they are. So, hiring a defensive-minded coach, but not one that's really kind of gotten fat and sassy in his sandals like Mike Smith was in Atlanta. That really,
sandals are pretty something.
You make choices in life, okay. And look, let's be honest, okay? If you're a man, if you're gonna wear sandals, just wear flip flops for crying out loud. I mean,
why do you need that many straps on your feet?
To borrow from the Japanese. You don't really need to bind your feet like that when you're coaching a football team. I mean, really, just kind of let them breathe.
Any situation.
Let them breathe. Let them be free.
I need freedom in my toes. Absolutely.
Exactly. It was like he was making an old fashioned apple pie. There was so many like crisscross patterns of it was really strange. But anyway, we're talking about Mike Smith's strange man sandals, his mandals, if you will.
Yes.
That was a long time coming. I think too a little bit of fear of God for Dimitroff too wasn't a bad thing either. I think they had made some cute moves. And they've also made some bonehead moves too, especially on the offensive line. So they really need to get things right. And I think that's a good thing to shake things up a little bit and kind of get things moving. So I would think Quinn would be great. I think he would be a great hire. I think he'd fire up that defense. There are some good guys along that defense. I think some really good players in the secondary as well. I think that they could be a much better team next year already. So I would like that hire. I think they do need a defensive minded coach, somebody with a little bit of fire in his belly. So I don't understand the San Francisco 49ers at all. I don't know what the hell they're doing. I don't know why I honestly think that when you fire your head coach or your head coach leaves or whatever, you're going to fire him, but he takes another job and they're going to fire him. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
I think you really should just kind of gut the whole place, like an HDTV show, just gut the whole damn place, get a sledgehammer, break down the drywall. You know what's up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
and start over. I mean, really, that's how you really should approach it, because while they had a good defense, they get rid of the guy that really kind of helped patch that defense together, which, you know, Fangio, which I don't understand at all. But and I maybe Tom Sewell and Fangio don't get along. I don't know. But that's bizarre to me. And now you're starting from scratch. That's the best part of your team is your defense, really. Their offense was really incredibly vanilla last year, and I think mm-hmm. they're probably going to be the same again this year, unless they hire somebody really creative to kind of change things a little bit. But you have the same guy, one of the same, you know, figureheads from the old regime. It just like it almost like it says like, you know we sucked, but we kind of I don't know, we didn't suck that bad. So we'll keep this guy around, and maybe we'll bring in a new guy, and we'll see how that works. It's like you know, mixing batter to a cake, and then pulling half of the batter out, and then adding other crap into it, and thinking the cake's going to be better. It's not. You have to start from scratch. Yeah. You have to put new flour, new eggs, new butter, whatever. You can't just like take half of it out and then start, you know, again. I just doesn't make any sense. So.
Well, what's that say about if the Broncos promote Gase then?
I don't like that either, to be honest with you. I think that's placating Peyton. That's a bridge year type thing.
Yeah.
And I really do think – I think John Elway's really kind of he's like the kid with all the toys. You know, like he's the kid – he's the lonely rich kid with like all the boxes. Really, like he's playing with all the toys and all the kids are outside playing football. And he forgets like what he loves, but he's just kind of playing with all the toys. It's like really,
yeah.
The reality is that there are people that are smarter than John Elway at what he does that he really should be surrounding himself with. And it maybe Gase is that guy. I don't know. I think that you really need to, what that team needs is somebody at the top as a head coach that brings everybody together. And if you want to make that next leap, because they seem like the Broncos seem like a bunch of action figures. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm doing, I know I'm a ton of metaphors and analogies here, guys. I'm so sorry.
It's welcome. It's welcome.
But really, it's what they are. They're like a lot of great pieces. Okay. But they weren't cohesive.
Right.
And you know, and it's almost like a kid playing with toys. It's like you're putting together all these things, but they're not all a team necessarily. They're not all playing under that. Because Seattle, you can argue Seattle really didn't have a collection of talent that like Denver put together on the free agent
right.
market. They went out and spent money. You know, they got all these action figures. You know,
but they work pretty good as a team.
But all told, they weren't consistently great. You know, throughout
right. well,
the
I
year,
mean, Seattle works great as a team, but then you didn't really get that out
Seattle
of Denver.
Does. Exactly, and Seattle with all their cast offs and everything else and. You know, fifth round, fourth round guys, whatever, they all play like, you know, like the kids in like Red Dawn or something, you know, like go back to like an old 80s movie. Like they're all like playing together, you know, they all care about the same goal. And that matters. I mean, the Patriots are the same way. You know, if you don't buy into what their goal is, then they get rid of you. I mean, that's kind of what it is, and I think that's where the Broncos kind of lost it a little bit. Like, I think John Elway probably, you know, when he was putting together this team, put his feet up on the table, thought he was, you know, like a badass, probably lit up a cigar and,
yeah.
you know, poured some brandy and stuff. But I think the reality was that it was all a lot of nice pieces that really didn't completely gel. You know, they all did their job separately, but we never saw them put things together. That's why they lost to some teams that they shouldn't have lost to. And they had some bad games. I think that, you know, next year, maybe that changes, but I don't know by promoting somebody like Gase, to improve something that was already pretty good. You know, the offense was good. It just wasn't healthy. You know,
right.
Peyton wasn't healthy. You know,
right.
we had some issues with Sanders not being healthy too. Julius Thomas was hurt for a while. Those guys are all healthy. You don't have a problem.
Sure.
You have a problem if you don't have somebody at the top getting everybody to play. I think I hope people listen and they write you and they email you and whatever and they yell at me on Twitter if you want to. You can Twitter shout at me if you want to. I think the problem is probably Peyton Manning, because I think Peyton probably has more power in that organization than people think.
Oh, of course he does. He's Peyton Manning. He's Peyton Manning. The team is run by a former quarterback who loves quarterbacks.
They had to recruit him there, which doesn't happen in the NFL.
Yeah.
Which is why John Fox is gone.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because you didn't win, so who's the problem? Well, not Peyton Manning, who couldn't throw the football at all. But it's going to be John Fox. It's going to be the red-faced guy that's shouting at everybody. Get rid of him.
Peyton makes more than John Fox.
Exactly. But that's the reality, is that, you know, you get rid of the guy, you know, the guy that orchestrates the whole thing. You get you don't get rid of the featured violinist. You get rid of the conductor. And that's, you know, basically what they did. Although the conductor really all along is really Peyton, let's be honest. So, and that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. They need to bring in somebody with an opinion and an attitude that's not going to say, I'm going to be hands-off and let Peyton do whatever he wants. No, you need to bring somebody in that actually knows something that wasn't just sort of a facilitator. And look, John Fox is a good football coach, but most of his teams were all running back-led teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he never had a quarterback with any personality. Any kind of you know, verve at all. He always had a game manager type at the helm. Always. Okay. I mean, Jake Delhomme was his guy for so long. I mean, let's be honest. So if you look at it from that perspective, he was more than happy to sit back and say, oh, Peyton, you just kind of run the show and I'll be over here with the defense and, you know, messing around over here and we'll make sure that the defense is all, we're good to go. And that works fine until Peyton Manning gets hurt.
Right.
And then you don't have anybody to say, hey, we're going to do this week, and get in Peyton's face and say, look, man, we saw you throwing ducks last week. We're going to limit you. We're going to have intermediate passes here and there. You're going to check down to the running back, you know, and we're going to run the football this week. We're not going to have you make any big throws downfield. It's all going to be short passes. And we're going to dominate with the running game. Oh, no. I mean, I don't know. We don't know what's going on in the meeting rooms, but you know, with a personality like that, Peyton Manning is never going to be told that he can't make those pass attempts when he's facing Andrew Luck, for God's sakes.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to happen. So, yeah. But it should, because he looked like shit, let's be honest. And when you look like that, you need a coach to tell you, this is what we're going to do. Like with Bill Belichick, when Tom Brady looked like crap in Week 11 against the Colts, they ran Jonas freaking Gray.
Yeah.
They pulled off a pile of ashes, and he ran for 200 yards because they could. Because every play he's clipping 6 and 7 yards a carry, and Brady was throwing interceptions. They did that, and Brady was humble enough to say, you know what, I'm not having a good game. So let's ride it here. Let's let our defense elevate us too and do that. Now, when you have an ego that tells you, no, let me, I can definitely elevate this team with my arm, and you really can't, that's what you get. And that's what we saw last week, I mean, with Peyton. So, I mean, hopefully next year that, you know, that changes a little bit. But I don't know that if Gase gets the job, I think you're seeing more of the same, you know.
Kind of seems like a weird spot for Gase, though, just because obviously he's on a team that's, you know, been successful for the last few years, and he's going to get elevated to the head coaching position, which is what he wants, assuming this happens.
Right.
Yeah, that's obviously all assuming it happens. And but then, you know, what's the longevity there? You know,
yeah.
Do they start over completely once Peyton's done? Because because all of a sudden they don't have a quarterback.
Or is he going to keep the job at that time? Right. Are they going to feel comfortable with him? And you don't know, you know, unless you're in that front office and understand how all those people work together. But it seems like it's almost better for him to go somewhere else and try and, you know, do a thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, his thing. Rather than picking up these pieces and being the stopgap for Peyton so he doesn't retire, or whatever, you know, underlying things may be there. Not that I know that they are, but
Yeah, I think it's always best to start from scratch. I mean, I think their fear is that they don't want to lose Peyton.
Right.
Because they think Osweiler is not ready and that they look at the draft.
I don't think he's ready either. Just
so yeah. I think that they look at this. No, I mean, like, really even like to take that step to like be even like Drew Stanton level.
Sure.
Let's put. Now, I think that they also look at this draft and think, wow, this is kind of a scary draft, too, for quarterbacks. Like, that. They don't feel like, you know, there's enough there. And to move up to try to get somebody would be scary. So they're still looking a year away. So from beyond Peyton, it's Osweiler for the short term, you know. And maybe they think that maybe they'll be in that Hackenberg lottery, you know, maybe a year from now, I don't know, or somebody else. But I again, it's just hard to really kind of pinpoint what they'll do. I think they're probably a team that's better off, you know, making a trade for somebody or getting into, you know, some situation where there's a quarterback that, you know, maybe a team's not excited about anymore that is a bad fit on their offense, and maybe they make an overture to another team to kind of get some player to back up Peyton. I mean, I think that's maybe an option, but that's the problem when you sign a veteran quarterback. I mean, we've seen this with Favre too.
Sure.
I mean, you're a rental. You're there for a couple of years, maybe, you know, and then you get that itch. Oh, do I want to play or do I want to retire? And you're not sure. And, you know, and that's why, you know, it's hard to really make plans beyond that. And when you hire and fire people, you know, don't buy green bananas because they're not going to be ripe by the time you leave town. And that's just kind of how it goes. I mean, it's fascinating. It's really, really fascinating to me because I think that, you know, like you touched on Rex Ryan. I mean, let's be honest. It's like it's the upstate New York Jets, really. I mean,
I was just about to get into Rex Ryan because it is pretty fascinating that he basically left one team in a specific situation, no quarterback, defense is the strength, maybe you can run the ball,
right,
to another team where defense is the strength, you got no quarterback, and maybe you can run the ball.
Well, here was the issue.
Maybe he just likes beef on Weck.
Yeah, beef on Weck. It's delicious. It really is. Here's the thing, okay? I think he really wanted the Atlanta Falcons job.
Oh, and yeah, he felt kind of burned because they're waiting. They're trying to be patient for Dan Quinn.
Right. And
Rex Ryan's not patient.
And I think that's probably smart on their part to wait for somebody that maybe doesn't have all that bluster. Because they've seen, look, it's kind of idiotic to think that Rex Ryan, who kind of plays a split personality thing, you know, he started out being all bluster and then after a couple of years after he started losing, he became all sort of the humbled Rex, and, you know, he's not going to talk trash anymore and this and that. And now that he signs back with Buffalo, then he's now boisterous Rex, and he's making guarantees for playoff wins and all that stuff.
I prefer this Rex over gentle.
I do too, but the problem is that it's like a Jekyll and Hyde, and I don't blame Atlanta for saying, you know, we want you to be this guy. Just go coach the defense. The offense is fine. Get the defense better, and we'll be competitive in this division that really we could win easily if our defense was better.
Right.
I don't think he threw that vibe. I think he threw that vibe like boisterous Rex. He probably came in there, you know, kicking up his heels a little bit and, you know, saying, I'm going to do that. And they probably were like, oh, we don't need soundbite Rex, because that's just not how they roll. And now, again, that infrastructure is all from the Belichick regime, and they don't want to have guys stirring up crap. You know, you don't need to put bulletin board stuff. The Patriots are a team that, and the Falcons, I'm sure, are teams that, like, we wait for them to give us bulletin board, to give us motivation.
Right.
We're not going to try to motivate you. We're not going to give you an opportunity to come light us up. I mean, we're going to let you say something stupid first, and then we'll plaster it all over our locker room. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And I think what happens there is that, you know, Rex could have come in humble and, you know, with a different perspective and say, look, I know this defense, you know, needs work, and, you know, I want to do this and this and get this thing going and blah, 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 blah. And this offense is great. And, you know, we can come together on an offensive mind and get a guy in here that we think can carry on and help progress with Matt Ryan and company. And they would have hired him probably, but I think he kind of like, you know, probably came in with that vibe. And they weren't sure, and they maybe, like you said, they still kind of really coveted Dan Quinn a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And maybe they get their guy, and it's probably the right choice, because I think Quinn will come from a different perspective. Like, he won't be that same kind of, you know, bravado, but not back it up bluster that we've seen from Rex, you know, from time to time, you know. And they don't want that. They want a guy that just comes in, does his job, fixes what he needs to fix, and hopefully be competitive in a really easily winnable division, let's be honest. And I think that, you know, that's probably something that Quinn could do. So they were probably happy with that. On the flip side, you know, upstate New York, I mean, you know, if you're a head coach of a football team, if you fart, it's front page news in Buffalo. So and that's good. I mean, that's good for them. That's good. It's going to put butts in seats. It's going to get the fan base excited. Mm-hmm. And Rex Ryan is, you know, it's going to be bulletin board. Every time they play the Patriots, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. And that's great. And I think they'll be good. I think the defense is already in place for him already. He's got a lot of talented guys that he could actually make even better, I think. Offensively,
that's the thing. Everybody was saying how, like, this is such a lateral move for him because
it is,
you know,
though,
it's the same situation. I think that team is built better than the Jets
right now. The secondary is better. The front, I'd say it's arguable that the front four, or the defensive line, depending on the alignments that they use,
they got better weapons on offense too, though.
It's kind of debatable too. And I think Sammy Watkins is certainly a nice weapon. But if you don't have a quarterback, then it doesn't really matter. And that's
kind of that argument.
Yeah. And that's kind of the way it was too in New York. You know, you bring in, you know, players and it doesn't matter if you don't have, you know, a quarterback. I mean, if you have two, you know, like, I don't know who made that quote. The old saying was, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterback.
Yeah.
And that was exactly what the Jets were. And it may be the same thing for the Bills. So, I don't know. I think that,
well, who's their second? Cause
he's bringing in Sanchez.
Orton retired. So
yeah, I mean,
Sanchez.
That would be interesting because that's their only option. They don't have a pick, you know. It would have been funny if Jones had declared, because then he would have been available maybe in the second round, you know, maybe. they could have made that leap, but I don't know. But I think that, you know, you don't want to touch anybody like Brett Hundley, UCLA. I think he's such a raw product. It's the bad draft after that. It's a steep cliff. So, I mean, they have to hit up free agency to get a quarterback. I mean, to you know, I mean,
Sanchez, Brian Hoyer. I think Brian Hoyer could be an option
Make an overture to get Jay Cutler. I don't know.
I mean, yes.
I would love Jay Cutler.
Oh,
I would
my
love.
God. Rex and Jay.
That would
AFC,
be amazing.
AFC, I mean, AFC East, Jay Cutler. I mean, Buffalo. And that face that just curmudgeonly, like, sourpuss. I just would love it. I would love it so much. I would die every week. I'd be so happy to watch that. But I think, you know, they have to make that kind of a move in order. And I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll make an overture to somebody, you know, to get a quarterback in there, because they have to do something. And, you know, they can do enough with the run game. The offensive line is good. You know, it's pretty solid, and they've got a decent run game. I think that, you know, Spiller is probably gone. Maybe they draft another running back. It's probably a smart thing to do. And it's a good, deep, not great, good, great at the top, okay, with Gurley, you know, and Melvin at the top. I think those two are the cream of the crop, and then it kind of goes like the second tier, you know, Jay Ajayi, Boise State, and a bunch of other guys that you could certainly add to the mix, and I think that would, you know, satisfy the ground and pound mentality of Rex Ryan. And they'll be great. And I think their, again, their defense could be easily elevated to, you know, to the top of the league, really. I mean, if you can maximize.
They were up there already, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, again, he was playing with one hand tied behind his back in that secondary last year.
Right.
For the Jets. So, I mean, obviously this year he's got a much better situation. He could draft somebody again, too, to kind of fortify that secondary as well. And they could be really, really good. I mean, that people forget that. Like, it sometimes takes, like, a veteran free agent, you know, here, and a really, like, bullseye pick of a rookie to add to your defense. And it could be exponentially better. Like, and the next year it could be just like, wow. And we've seen that. We've seen defenses go from, like, the bottom half of the league suddenly to, like, top, you know, 10 to 12 in, like, a year. Right. And you're like, wow, what happened there? Well, they added so-and-so, and they got a couple of these you know, free agents, and they made a trade for this guy. And all of a sudden, they're a much, much better defense. And I think, you know, it's already a really good defense in Buffalo. I mean, if he just made a couple little changes, I mean, it could be the best in the league, better than Seattle. I mean, that's how good they are.
Yeah,
you know, they're both. I mean, look, and they were they had a bunch of guys hurt too. So I mean, right. You know, once they're 100% healthy, I mean, they're going to be really, really tough to stop. So yeah, I mean, as a Pats fan, I don't love that, obviously, but and I love to see Rex just go to Atlanta. But you know, good for him. No, good for him, really, because I mean, I think, you know, stay close to where you were before. Stick it to the Jets. I mean, give them a little bit of the business and be able to still kind of, you know, challenge Belichick year to year. So I think that's really good for him. So I don't blame him. I'm sure Atlanta was probably more ideal for him because he could probably go in right away and very easily be a playoff team.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this situation he could challenge, but I think the Pats will still – regardless, still win the division next year as long as all the returning players are back. If they still keep Revis around and everybody else, I mean their defense is really, really talented, more talented than people think. Offensively, you know, as long as you have healthy Gronkowski and everybody else, and if they draft well and they add some new components and some free agents, they'll still be really, really good and competitive next year. I don't think that. You know, the Jets are completely rebuilding, and I think that the Dolphins kind of took a step back again. It's like,
yeah,
it's weird what they were doing. So, so I think he's in a good spot. You know, he's in a good spot to at least challenge for, you know, that second spot. So, you know, good for him, man. Good for – and I like Rex Ryan. He's good for football. He's a big mouth.
Yeah, it's hard not to like him.
He's got a big pie hole and everything, and he says a lot of stupid things. But I he's good for football, man. I mean, because he backs it up for the most part, you know, especially defensively. But, you know, he is, you know, who he is. So it's fun, man. It's fun to watch Rex. So
before we started recording here, you were talking about the rookie running backs, particularly from a dynasty drafting standpoint.
Yeah.
And you've got a little bone to pick with the way that these running backs are scouted and analyzed and regarded. So the floor is yours, Johnny.
It's more of a sweeping kind of analysis, if you will, guys. I think this is like we really need to take a step back because I think there's more of a, you know, not to sound like an old curmudgeon about, you know, scouting players because I'm not a scout. Never professed to be, you know, I watch cut-ups on Draft Breakdown, like every other schlub that doesn't have all 22 of college football. I that's what I do, and I think I have a pretty good eye for it. I don't, you know, think I'm better than anybody that's doing it for a living. Would never make that statement. But the reality is I hear too often the numbers just don't add up. or this player is too small, or this player doesn't reach that earmark for speed or for this drill or whatever. I just find that maddening. I think that you're if you're scouting from just numbers only, then you're missing the big picture. And I think, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. was a great example last year. You know, a lot of people had him. A lot of people that the old school scouts had him quite high. They had him, you know, number two or three. I had him at two for a while for Dynasty, and then ultimately at three because of Sammy Watkins was like, you know, because the Bills went crazy to get him and moved heaven and earth. So I thought he would have more of a chance to break out early. And as it turns out, he had an opportunity early, but Beckham, once he got healthy, just kind of lit the NFL on fire, which, you know, felt great to see that he did. I knew he was a talented player.
You could tell just by how angry Tom Coughlin was about a hamstring injury that he couldn't do anything about.
Exactly.
He was so furious that his favorite draft pick ever, clearly, had that hamstring. It just made him so angry.
It was funny, too, because if you guys, I don't know if you've watched the series, it's a really good one. I don't know. And it's kind of shame on NFL Network for not really packaging this thing really well. I think they should have done this more of like a weekly, done it in a week's time and like had it on every night. They packaged it on Weird Hours or whatever. It was called Finding Giants.
Yes.
And it was all about the scouts for the New York Giants and them going to different areas. Some have assignments to different regions and smaller schools and such. And they go around looking at different prospects and, you know, and they were really, you know, watching at Beckham's pro day, and they were like, you know, they were so excited about Beckham.
Yeah.
And they tried not to like let anybody on who had the camera in front of them to like let them know too much, because they really wanted this kid. And when they knew they could get him and still be able to like move their pick and still get him, they were like through the moon. You know, yeah. Reese was like going crazy that he could get him and still, you know, get draft picks in return. I mean, by, you know, moving the, because Buffalo was so excited about, you know, moving up. So for Watkins. And I think that really, you know, speaks to somebody's talent evaluation, their eye, you know, your scouting department knows what they're doing. And I think that, you know, for me, having that validation of watching him and being really high on him and having everybody say, well, he only had two or three touchdowns in the SEC. I don't understand that. Like, yeah, but did you see what he can do with his body? I mean, like when he's making a catch, I mean, he's just like dominating defenses. I mean, he's got three other wide receivers. He's got, you know, a running back, Jeremy Hill, you know, on that team. You know, they had Jarvis Landry on that team, Zach Mettenberg. I mean, it was a pretty talented football team.
Yeah, really.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're not going to throw to him all the time. And he kind of came on late a little bit. But I'm like, he was special. When I saw him make certain plays, I'm like, wow, he just like blew me away. Like, he just, what he was able to do, huge hands and just had vice grip hands, like for catches, like contested catches. And I just bet on that talent. And I think what happens now is that people are just so, I saw a mock draft today. Okay, which spurred a debate.
That's your first problem.
That right, exactly. Because mock drafts, all they do is make people angry anyway. And they do. And it was from somebody I respect who did it, and I thought it was a kind of an interesting take. And they had, you know, Todd Gurley going to New England at 31. I thought that's not too crazy. And right. Of course it spurred a debate where people were flipping out like, oh,
you can't possibly take a running back in the first round.
First round. Anymore. Oh, I can't do that anymore. I'm like, well, when can you take him? Well, you could take him at 35. What the hell's the difference if you take him at 31 or 35? I mean, really, if you take him at 31, you get him for an extra year. You get that option, that rookie option. Why would you pass on that if you thought this guy was super, like, a tier above the next running back? Like, I mean, why would you pass on that? I don't understand that. And granted, I get that running backs are, you know, very interchangeable for the most part. If you're looking at a certain linear level of talent, you know, you can replace them and say, okay, I can take an Alfred Morris and get another guy that's very similar to Alfred Morris and plug him in this system and get similar production. I understand that. That's fine. But when you get a guy that you can hand off the football to 30 times a game and he is your football identity for your team, okay, then why wouldn't you draft them? I don't understand. It just doesn't make sense to me. I think that, you know, especially if you look, even if you want to keep them for 2 or 3 years, you know, part ways, then fine. You know, be smart. Get a super talented running back and, you know, use them until you can't use them anymore. And let somebody else overpay for them in the open market. You know, right. Why the hell would you do that? It just seems so simplistic to just say, well, the numbers show that it's such a low average of running backs that actually excel. And you can look at the running backs from 2000 to 2014. Okay, fine. Let's look at them. There's a bunch of busts. Fine. Are those players supremely talented? No. Was it a bad running back year for that class? Yes. How about guys like Adrian Peterson and Marshawn Lynch in those other classes? Were those guys supremely talented? Yes. How did they make out in those offenses? They kicked ass and they dominated and they were the identity of that team. So why wouldn't you take them at that draft position? Well, okay. So now nobody's probably going to pick a running back now in the top 15 of a draft. I think those days are over. But if you're picking at the bottom of a draft, at the end of the round, what's the difference? If you take them then or if you wait 8 or 9 picks, because some other jackass from some other team is going to take them and use them and beat you with them. If you wait and like say, well, I'll put my hands up, you know, my hands behind my head, my feet up on the desk and just wait for them to fall to me, because it's probably not going to happen. If they're really, really talented, you know, somebody like Gurley's really talented. Richardson is probably going to be the first running back taken, and I don't know that he's the most talented, to be honest with you. Gurley's coming off an injury, so I think that he'll probably fall. So if he's somebody that like falls to the end of the first round or the top of the second, why wouldn't you take him if you thought that once he's healthy, you know, you could plug him in day one. You know, he could pick up a blitz. He could carry the football 20 times and be your guy right away without too much hassle. I don't get that. And I don't understand why people are so hesitant for that just because they're people poorly scouted running backs for a while. And they have. I mean, when classes are bad, instead of, you know, taking a step back and say, well, you know what, this is a pretty linear class. I'm not going to reach on running back, which what they should have done on that particular class, and go target another position. Instead, they reached, you know, they grab a David Wilson at the end of round one, like the Giants did. Yeah. Mistake. Okay. And we've seen that, you know, other times too, with other players, like, you know, with Tennessee, with Sankey. I don't think Sankey's all that good. And, you know, it's short sample size. Now it's only 1 year, but it's looking like that was a mistake for them. Now, you know, because of the class and because of the players in the class, you might sort of, you know, that becomes a little askew. You know, they people fall in love with certain attributes and they don't really look at the player in totality. And they look at the numbers and they kind of say, oh, you plug this kid into our offense and he'll be fantastic. Not necessarily. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot to look at. I think this league, to be honest with you, is becoming a league where you are, you know, 220 pounds plus. And if you have soft hands, you can catch some passes. That's your lead back. I think smaller backs are complimentary. There's a bunch of them in this class too, and they're good, and you'll add them, but you'll probably draft them later, and that's fine. And those, some of those guys might be overdrafted because they are talented and they are going to wow people in interviews, and they're going to put up big numbers in the combine and people are going to freak out. But there are also guys that are, you know, going to be big, heavy bangers that are going to, like, you know, be able to like be the Jeremy Hills, eventually become the lead guy. Whereas somebody like Gio Bernard becomes a complimentary guy. We're going to see more of that. And that's fine. I think that's kind of where the NFL is moving, like the 1-2 punch again. And smart teams will continue to do that with fewer lead backs, you know, that really kind of form that identity. So, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I just think it's lazy to sort of label, and I hate this word, guys, but outlier. Like, I think that's so stupid and lazy to say, well, he's an outlier. Odell Beckham Jr. is an outlier because he's not 6'5" and 225 pounds. So because he's great, he's an outlier. Okay. Because he doesn't fit your box mold, he's an outlier. I think that's nonsense. I think that's idiotic. I think that's taking away from somebody's, you know, immense talent and saying he's just more talented than the next guy. It's crazy to me. I think that we see that too often. I think that's lazy. I think that because it doesn't fit your narrative, you're automatically going to say, well, this player is, he's under 6 feet, you know, whatever, or he's 218 pounds. He's not 225 or whatever. So he's an outlier. No, not really. You have to really look at the player in totality. You look at them. Like a running back. Can he pick up a blitz? Is he a good blocker? Is he strong? Has he had a full complement of carries? Can he catch the football? Then what's the problem if he's 217 pounds and not 230? Or, you know, wide receiver, are they under 6 feet? Is he built like a tight end? No. Well, he's not. But what's right. What's his vertical? They have big hands. I mean, does he make contested catches? I mean, all these things are just, they're kind of maddening. If you don't watch football, and I don't mean to say that sound like a jerk, like, you know, all those people that write for some beats and say, well, yeah, if you're not watching tape, bro, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm not right. either, because I'm not looking at tape. I'm looking at cut-ups. But if you're watching cut-ups, at least a couple of minute cut-ups from a game, you can see a guy that can get up and make contested catches. You saw it with Alshon Jeffrey. You saw it with Mike Evans. You saw it with Odell Beckham. You know, guys that can run the route tree, you know, that can shake off defenders in small, you know, areas and win in a number of different ways. They're complete players, maybe not, you know, a fully polished players, but eventually, you know, all the tools are there. Eventually, they're going to be great football players, even if the numbers don't say that they are.
Johnny, all I'm going to say is that if you're tired or if you're sick of lazy draft pundit speak, this is going to be a long 3 months for you.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. It, look, Ryan, I think that there's going to be so much, you know, overanalyzing that I think this year I'll really just focus on my own stuff. I'll try not to get into heated arguments on Twitter, and I know that's hard to do. And I know there will be plenty of people who think their opinion matters more than yours. And I think just kind of sticking to what I believe, because I think my biggest mistake last year was listening to groupthink. Not all of it, some of it. Okay. Right. When enough of it became so like sort of almost like fog, you know, in my mind a little bit, I kind of leaned a little bit, and I really shouldn't have, because my mind told me my number one was Mike Evans. My number two was Odell Beckham, and that shifted. Okay. My number four, I believe, was Kelvin Benjamin. And then when I heard all the speak about he's lazy, you know, and he is sometimes, and he does drop passes, but he is a big freak that you throw the football up to. He's going to beat his defender almost all the time if he doesn't drop the damn football. And I should have listened to that aspect instead of listening to all the other people talking about who he doesn't like football and doesn't really care and all that. You know, if you fall into that trap, you know, that's when your mind changes. You shouldn't. If you have an opinion about a player based on their talent and based on how you think they'll project, just stick to it, even if it's unpopular. Because believe me, Odell Beckham Jr. was so unpopular up until a few months ago, everybody was like, whoa, everybody was like lighting candles and for Odell Beckham after like those games and that big catch and everything else. And he was just blowing up football. Before that, everybody was writing hit pieces on how this guy will never succeed. What a wasted pick by the Giants. They're so stupid. They could have had this guy and that guy. And meantime, those other guys that they were all writing about never even made a dent. Okay? And then the guys that I like, you know, I like Cody Latimer too, but he didn't have an opportunity because Denver had like a stacked lineup. They didn't need him.
Right.
You know, Devontae Adams, great player. You know, we saw a little bit from him last week, but Green Bay doesn't need him right now. Maybe they'll need him next year. But, you know, Giants needed Odell Beckham. They needed him bad. And when he did come, you know, to fruition, it was great. It was beautiful to watch a young, talented player kind of blossom like that. And I think that that's what it's all about. When you believe in the talent, you believe that talent is transcendent. Don't let people talk you out of it. Just kind of stick to your, you know, convictions and just keep rolling with it. I mean, that's how I feel about it. I mean, there's players I like more than others this year already, and I'm still in the early part of kind of looking at those prospects.
We're going to have you back once it comes near draft time.
Yeah, I think probably
– figure who find out who's, like, moved their way up and down and who you've talked yourself out of because of what everybody said.
Well, I think that aspect of it, I firmly believe that part of it this year, I will not fall prey to that. But I definitely will join you guys again and we'll talk, you know, draft. And, you know, I am focusing mostly on offense, though. I'll say that. Defensively, I'm just kind of, you know, washing my hands of it because it's just too much, really, for me. I'm just going to focus on the fantasy dynasty side. And but I think that there is –
you got to do what you do, man.
That's it. And there's some guys that you're definitely going to want on your fantasy team. I love Kevin White right now, big time. And I know people are down on him because he's a West Virginia product and that, you know, those wide receivers haven't really been successful at the next level. But I think he's different. And I love Max Williams, man, tight end.
Yeah.
He's a monster, and I think that he's got that little bit of that Gronkowski nastiness into him, his game. So I like him quite a bit. So there's some guys that are like kind of really, you know, I'm a little bit higher on than others, and I think those will probably still be pretty much at the top of my list. So, but yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, it's a tough quarterback class, and those are the hardest positions to really, really evaluate. I mean, anybody will tell you that. And I think I struggle the most with those positions. I think unless you get somebody that's like a once in a, you know, generation talent like Andrew Luck or something, they're really hard to really figure out. I mean, it's just, I loved Teddy last year. You know, he was my guy and I think I had him at the top. And especially when he landed with Minnesota, I thought that was ideal for him. And turns out, you know, the end game, even though he started out kind of rough, you know, he was ultimately the best, I thought, quarterback of that class overall. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, this year I think it's, you know, it's just such a weird thing where it's just top heavy and it's going to flatten right out.
We're gonna spend the next couple months doing our homework, and you can spend the next couple months doing your homework, and then we'll compare notes
in a couple of months.
It'll be fun, and it'll be fun too because if you guys, if you aren't in the Dynasty League yet, you really should. And I will say this in closing too, because I mean we'll be talking a lot about this stuff too. Definitely check out follow at Sportable NFL on Twitter because we'll be talking a lot of this stuff in the coming months. I'll be on their podcast as well. I don't host that podcast, but I definitely will be visiting and talking Dynasty rookies. For me, I love it because I think that's the best part of playing Dynasty football, really, is the rookies. I mean, I don't care about the old veteran redraft guys. I mean, I think you know who's going to produce in those situations. I think it's the most exciting part is trying to predict who.
Yeah, because that part's established and it's the exactly that is what changes every year. So.
Exactly. Right. So when you, agreed. You know, like for me in certain leagues, you know, I in a couple of leagues I got, you know, Odell Beckham, Martavis Bryant, you know, I mean Isaiah Crowell in one league, and all three of those guys all, you know, had good weeks for me,
right,
and helped carry my team. So I, that's the fun part, like because then if you have an eyeball for talent, then you're certainly going to have a leg up over your competition, because there are people that just don't in your dynasty league. They don't even look at rookies. You know, right. they look at after the draft, and they're like, okay, and they're kind of just looking at stuff, and they haven't really followed it much. I mean, you are so far away, more ready than they are to just kind of wheel and deal once the trading season starts. So it's a lot of fun.
All right.
Well, I think that about wraps it for this week.
Nice. That was this was brought to you by James Cameron. It's a 3-hour tour. What's up, man?
Before we let you go, Johnny, please let our wonderful listeners know where they can find you and what you've been up to all around the internets.
Yeah, you can find me at SportableNFL, actually Sportable.is. It's a Canadian website that actually does some really cool NFL fantasy, doing a lot of DFS right now, daily fantasy stuff, brought to you by some good people over there. Tons of really talented people that I'm working with, so I'm really excited about that. And it's really what Sportable is, basically. And they do have an app too on the iTunes store and Android as well, where you get basically 550 word blurbs for different like topics, you know, around the NFL and different sports and everything else. And so if you're on the run, you're going to work, you're getting a little hit on your favorite team, you're getting a little blurb here and there. So from a lot of smart people. Also find me occasionally at Bro Jackson. I write for them as well. Mostly off football, guys, deep stuff. So if you don't know, go check it out. Mm-hmm. I do something called Tuesdays with Rummy. I think I've got something in the can right now that'll be talking about my old job at the state mental hospital. So that should be pretty fun. And that'll be coming up, I think, soon. I haven't really decided yet on a published date, but yeah, I love to write off of topic of football. I wrote some personal stuff about my brother, a mental illness, and you know, it's pretty deep kind of stuff. If you don't know that about me, go check it out. Again, Tuesdays with Rummy. I actually wrote something too, guys, on a funnier note about having a vasectomy.
Oh yeah, I read that. That was pretty good. That's a pretty good one, Johnny.
And yeah, so I mean, I'm an open book. I mean, I don't hold anything back, and I like to have, you know, I really love to kind of, it's cathartic to kind of write about your life and have some fun with it. And I enjoy writing about that more than anything else, to be honest with you. So go check that out for sure.
And of course, there's Twitter. You are on the Twitter.
At Rumpet Johnny, I haven't changed. My handle is the same. It's always going to be the same. And I love being here with you guys. I mean, look, the time just passes like nothing. And, you know, it's always fun. One of my favorite podcasts to be on, always, guys.
It's always our pleasure to have you join us.
Absolutely.
So we appreciate you once again taking out.
It's kind of like homecoming.
It's like homecoming, yes.
For all of us.
Exactly.
So we do appreciate you taking some more time here and joining us this week. And, of course, we'll be having you back prior to the draft in the next coming month or two.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks, guys. Thank you again to Rumford Johnny of Sportable NFL for joining us to break down all of the major news in the NFL, including the championship games and all of the coaching stuff. And, of course, adding his 2 cents about evaluation of running backs and talent evaluation in general of rookies when it comes to dynasty football. And I feel his pain because we're getting into the time of year where it's just like it's going to be an endless din of noise from everybody who is or fancies themselves a draft or rookie expert.
They just come out of the woodworks this time.
It's incredible. It's incredible. People who don't tweet all year long, you know, and then it's just it's February. It's time to go. It's
yeah, they were
January,
hibernating, and now they're you know they're stretching and waking up and ready to get after it for
oh,
three
yeah.
months. So
I'm sure that we'll have Johnny back in a little while to start previewing some of those rookies you can look forward to, both in reality football and in your dynasty or redraft fantasy leagues.
Yes.
So now it's time to wrap up this week's episode here of the F-Ball NFL podcast, which means it's time to read from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts. Facts, as always, in some air quotes. These facts may or may not be true. There's a reason why this book was 99 cents at the store where everything is $5 or less.
Certainly let us know if there's any factual errors going on in this book.
I have six facts for you today.
Ooh, bonus.
Let's start with this one. Gary Big Hands Johnson of the San Diego Chargers had 17 and a half quarterback sacks during the 1980 NFL season.
I thought I was going to say that he had big hands, but that's
you know cool. He probably did. He probably something tells me he probably at the same time also had big hands.
Like 17-inch hands or something.
That's what I thought it was kind of going. I wasn't, but I bet he had big hands. Defensive back Jack Tatum of the Oakland Raiders intercepted 30 passes during his 9-year NFL career, but never returned an interception for a touchdown.
Oh.
30 picks in 9 years, no return for a touchdown.
Yeah, just he didn't have elite speed.
I guess not. That's why he's a defensive back,
right.
Not a receiver. The Los Angeles Rams defensive front four in the 1960s was made up of Merlin Olsen, Deacon Jones, Rosie Greer, and Lamar Lundy. Collectively, those defensive linemen were known as the fearsome foursome.
Aha, uh-huh. That's right.
It's not very creative, but I guess when you're the first fearsome foursome, you don't really have to
sure.
get all that creative. Linebacker Sam Mills started at middle linebacker for the New Orleans Saints in the 1980s, even though he was only 5'9" tall and weighed only 225 pounds.
Wow.
That's a little linebacker.
Spark plug.
Let's see if someone can give Michael Sam a call. Randy Gradishar of the Denver Broncos returned an interception 93 yards for a touchdown against the Cleveland Browns on October 5th, 1980. I feel like there's all kinds of facts in this book about people returning interceptions on the Browns for touchdowns. It's not fair. And finally, defensive tackle Warren Sapp of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was a member of the 2002 All-NFL defensive team. I have a feeling that that is a correct fact because that's Warren Sapp in 2002.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
So those are our football facts of the week. As always, if some of them actually prove to be untrue in one or multiple ways, please let us know via Twitter. You will be handsomely rewarded for your sleuthing efforts. And with that, that draws this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast to a close.
Yes.
Again, a big thank you to Sportable NFL's Rumford Johnny, our MVP of the podcast, for joining us on this year's podcast this week. And thanks to all of you for joining us and listening and subscribing and being fans of this here podcast. We appreciate it. And with that, I'm Andrea Hanks. I'm the AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can search me on the Google to find my articles. You can go to BleacherReport.com. You can go to the TeamStream app and add me as one of your writers that you follow. You'll get all of my content that way. Or you can like me on the Facebook, Facebook.com/AHankstNFL. That's AHANGSTNFL. I also write about fantasy football for Pro Football Focus. That's profootballfocus.com. Fantasy Gold is free now because we are out of the fantasy football season, so you can get all my content and don't have to pay for it right now. So, hey. And you can also find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian, and I can be found right here as well as on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, thanks again to Rumford Johnny for joining us. Thanks for all of you listening to our wonderful podcast. And we'll be back next week to talk about the teams that won in their respective conference championships and start getting Super Bowl preview action coming together.
And we might have some discussion on Pro Bowl stuff.
But probably
maybe.
Not. Maybe not.
I think we should have a quick mention.
We should just talk about the Royal Rumble instead.
Well, that too.
So until next week, enjoy the games. We got very little football left to go, so savor every last moment of it. And until we meet again, enjoy football, and we'll see.
The best Sunday of the season.
Should be. And we'll be back next week.
That's right. Later.
Peace.